Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Welcome to the Fallon Forum. I am Ed Fallon, your host, and we're broadcasting from the heart of America's heartland, Des Moines, Iowa, with content relevant to you wherever you live in this country. Underwriting provided by Gateway Market, a Des Moines grocery and cafe offering artisan, local, and global foods, and catering for business and social events. More information at gatewaymarket.com. Hey, our program's bumper music provided by the Des Moines Irish Session. Later in the show, we'll be discussing Ivanka Trump's special island and also the uproar it's causing in Albania. We'll also talk about how some of you, well, some of us maybe, might inadvertently be helping make Elon Musk a trillionaire. And we'll be continuing our conversation about the International Year of the Woman Farmer. But first, joining me today, Charles Goldman. And before we talk about Donald Trump's odd obsession with men, good conversation to have during Pride Month.
Perfect, yeah.
We've got to talk about you as a doctor. Might have a really good opinion about this. Diabetes expert who was removed from a conference. And first, to kick it off, I want to play a short clip from that.
So here we are at the American Diabetes Association Scientific Sessions. I'm with Dr. Stephen Kahn, Dr. Justin Ryder, and Dr. Aaron Kelly. And we're being threatened to be arrested by these people because we were handing out an editorial published by Dr. Kahn in the flagship journal of the American Diabetes Association. And they physically grabbed us, forced us out of the conference center, and now are telling us we can no longer attend this meeting. They're taking our lanyards. So it's come to this in America. Censorship is real, and that's exactly why you wrote this, didn't you, Stephen?
Exactly.
So here we go. America needs to stand up. Scientists, stand up. Physicians, stand up.
Yeah, I mean, one of the ironies of that is that Dr. Kahn is actually the editor-in-chief of the journal that the Diabetes Association, in fact, publishes.
Yeah. So he's a very high-ranking and respected professional within the field of addressing diabetes.
Well, the real question here is, and I think what's intriguing and troubling about this is kind of the theme of Trump too, right? Which is the sort of kowtowing for fear that you might anger a dear leader and there'd be retaliation. I mean, if you remember one of the things about, there were a lot of psychologists and some psychiatrists who were writing articles and had written even books on the mental health of Donald Trump, and they were censured by the American Psychiatric Association for violating the Goldwater rule, right? Which was that, you can't write these things unless you've actually examined the patient yourself. But the real reason that came to pass in the 1960s was not some high-minded professional ideal. It was that they were afraid that since the government paid for a lot of mental health care, that if Goldwater won, that the psychiatrists would be hurt by the reduction of their fees. What's really interesting here is this thing was already published. They were handing out a copy of an editorial that was already published.
And it's not some whack job fringe piece. It's a very expert, or it's a piece authored by an expert.
Right.
At a conference dealing with diabetes.
To other experts.
Right. Yeah.
And one that had already been published, so it was readily available. So this is the whole thing with this attempt at censorship is, you're already censoring something that's in the public domain, right? Right, you published it, right? And their rationale was it was unprofessional behavior, and it had to do that they were going to have a administration official talk there. Are they saying that this editorial, which was about the cuts from NIH right. and how it was affecting diabetes research, were they implying that there'd be some sort of crazy person? Since, of course, anybody who ever tries to shoot anybody is it's a mental health issue. It's not the guns or anything else, right? That somebody among these diabetes doctor attendees was going to be so riled up by them passing out the editorial that they were going to take a shot at Jay Bakhtiari, who was the director of NIH. I mean, the whole thing is so ludicrous. It shows just how extreme. It's kind of like watching one of the cabinet meetings. Yeah. I mean, you know, the obsequiousness is like off the chart.
How wonderful you are, Mr. Trump. Yeah. Everybody has something brilliant to say about the president. And this is basically criticizing a key element of what one department in his administration has been, you know, doing relevant to diabetes.
Right. I mean, and it's the truth. I mean, yeah. There's a huge amount of research is funded by the federal government. And they don't want to piss anybody off in the administration because it could only get worse in their mind, which is probably true.
Well, speaking of getting on the wrong side of the president, there's been quite a bit of discussion about his apparent obsession with the physique of well-toned men. And it's just, I mean, there are those who are suggesting that he's gay, which I don't buy for a minute.
I can't say that I've ever heard anybody suggest it. I'm not sure who you would have heard from, but that sounds like the usual Trump thing. Some people have said.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Know? Yeah.
No, I think that he does make strange comments related to the appearance of men.
Yeah.
And, you know, for instance, you know, we're going to have the UFC, we've had the UFC fight.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was in the Thunderdome there outside.
And we unfortunately are taping this program before that fight, so we don't get to know how that turned out.
That's right. So, you know, whether it was hit by lightning, since it is outside during the summer in D.C. But, It's the obsession of the president with this very constrained and domineering view of masculinity. It's a reflection. We've talked on the show before. I don't think there's any, and again, this goes back to the Goldwater rule and everything else. I don't think there's anybody who understands how to diagnose narcissistic personality disorder who doesn't think that President Trump has narcissistic personality disorder. The, you know, a lot of times the mainstream media will say malignant narcissism. Malignant narcissism is not actually an actual diagnosis. It's more of a, it was kind of derived from literary descriptions.
Okay.
But the point is that people who have that kind of extreme narcissism have very, very weak egos. I mean, I know everybody kind of, or a lot of the brosphere thinks that Trump is very masculine, very strong, but he's just exactly the opposite. I mean, his sensitivity to criticism, his need for constant, you know, reassurance of his greatness from others, from people he despises.
Yeah, there was an interesting, entertaining comment by John Casey in Yahoo News. Quote, "The amount of spray tan, sculpted hair, and cosmetic concealer Trump deploys daily would make a drag queen blush, which is rich given that the Republican Party has made drag queen story hours a cornerstone of its culture war."
Yeah,
that's entertaining.
Well, it's the same thing. I mean, you've got and you know, Pete Hegseth is very similar in terms of his behavior.
Oh, he's at least in a lot better shape than Donald Trump.
Well, but the thing with Hegseth is, again, RFK Jr. similar. You know, they like showing off how buff they are. Remember, Hegseth took a room at the Pentagon as a makeup suite so that he would be made up, you know, appropriately for his appearances. He complained when they would shoot him from certain sides because it made his chin look weak. The Secretary of War thing, right, which Trump is also in love with. It's all about, it's performative virility, and it's all associated with violence, right? It's
How
associated,
so?
it's because it's always about combat, right?
Oh, with Hegseth.
And Trump too, to some degree. Yeah. I mean, for all his talk about he wants to be the, you know, the peace president.
Well, he already got
he's certainly reveling in a lot of conflict.
He already got a peace award.
Yeah.
The FIFA Peace Award.
The FIFA Peace Award. So, and he likes this thing with the Department of War. It's for the same reason. It's because it makes you seem stronger. You know, it's funny. I remember a long time ago, there was a guy by the name of Rocky Blyer who played fullback for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He had served in Vietnam. And, you know, one of the things I always hate about particularly football is everybody who plays sports is a hero. You know, and they interviewed Blyer one time, and he said, no, you don't get to be a hero by playing a sport or by fighting in the UFC or MMA or whatever, you know, organization. It's you also get to be a hero in ways that have nothing to do with war. But the masculinity which these men are personifying is almost always linked to war,
yeah,
to conflict, to combat. It's about dominance. It's the reason that they, many of them, no matter what they say, hate women. They're misogynists. You know, Pete Hegseth is part of a branch of Christian, of Protestantism, whose thought leader is a guy named Doug Wilson. And he's a believer that women shouldn't have the vote. They probably shouldn't even be working outside the home. They should occupy the traditional biblical role of women. And that is a lot, and you know, the complementary part of that is a lot of the population in the brosphere are people like, you know, the incels, the ones who hate women because women don't do what they want.
So I actually was conversing with somebody the other day who believes in that, who believes that women should not have the right to vote, that it should be one vote per household, and it should be the man.
That's Doug. That's absolutely what Doug Wilson's talking about.
But see, you know, I kind of come at it from, I think actually women should be given two votes. You know, men vote once, women can vote twice. Try to make up for some of the damage we've done.
I don't think we're in a place right now that that's ever going to happen.
Probably not.
But I do think that it is very emblematic of particularly men who are truly fearful. You know, and the other part of this is you never take responsibility. See, to me, you know, part of masculinity is taking responsibility for your actions, right? But with this government is filled with men. Not my fault, right?
Well, and less women all the time with...
Well, that's right.
Tulsi Gabbard gone.
Well, theirs is just bad because they're the same type because it wasn't their fault either. Yeah. I mean, you know,
right.
We have, Pam Bondi's, you know, testimony recently that it was all Todd Blanche. Todd Blanche, it was all his fault about what happened with the Epstein
files.
Exactly.
So I like what Roginski had to say about this this conversation. Now, the issue is not that a man complimented another man's appearance, referring to Trump. Mm. Normal people can say another person is attractive without turning it into a psychodrama. The issue is that Trump returns again and again to the same primitive vocabulary. Handsome men, strong men, beautiful men, muscular men, dominant men, well-endowed men, men who win, men who submit, men who praise him.
Yep. Yeah. Well, you know, it also, I think the importance of thinking about this is think about what was one of the first executive orders? Besides pardoning all 1,600 J6 people.
It's been long enough that I forget. What was it?
It was about that there's only two sexes, men and women, right? Now, in terms of, we're not here talking about gender. We're talking about sexuality. Sexuality is in multiple theories in the psychological and psychiatric realm agree. It's a spectrum. It's a spectrum which runs from totally heterosexual to totally not, right? Again, we're not talking here about trans, lesbian, anything else. That is a gender identity. Gender identity. This is about what arouses you, what you fantasize about, who are you attracted to, right? So the spectrum is not one end or the other. It's somewhere along a continuous scale such that men are going to have attraction to perhaps other men, not necessarily to want to engage in sex with them, right? But, you know, it's like the, it's like all these movies, you know, these bro movies, you know, and it's it that is not abnormal, nor is it even fixed, because the spectrum of sexual attraction and everything else changes over time in your life, you know, and circumstances. And it's just this whole point. It's a caricature of man, because the only understanding men like Trump and Hegseth have is I have to be all 100% man. Right. And a lot of these men have anxieties man, about right? the fact that they know inside they're not as clear on that as they want to be. You know, a lot of times they've done studies where they'll show men who are overtly very domineering, right? You know, very macho. And if you show them, you know, male homosexual porn, they're highly aroused because they're...
Ouch.
Well, it's simply because they have a conflict in themselves and their reaction is to play a part, especially a public part. The danger of this is you start to believe it.
I'm going to get your reaction on the kind of one of the final comments that Julie Roginski has to say on... the, I think, very provocative piece she wrote about this conversation. She said, the real danger of Trump's weird obsessions is that a man this insecure does not merely embarrass himself. He builds systems that require everyone else to validate him, like cabinet meetings. The Republican Party must pretend he's a genius. Evangelicals must pretend he's a Christian hero. Billionaires must pretend he's a populist. Military audiences must sit through his riffs about good-looking men. Voters must pretend cruelty is strength. The press must report his lies as the truth. Women must pretend his predation is just, quote, locker room talk. America must pretend that a man who cannot stop talking about other people's bodies is somehow the embodiment of toughness. I've not heard of this writer before. This is really good. I mean,
yeah, she's got a Substack. I can't remember. She did work within the government at one time. I thought it was in national security, but I'm not absolutely sure if that's true.
So, and I wonder how some of the folks I know on the political right, people who might have voted for him, feel about this weird obsession. I mean, it does seem like an obsession. He certainly comes back to it often enough.
Yeah, I mean, my concern with it, again, is that he's living, you know, everyone talks about this. He's sort of creating a reality show around him. He picks people for parts. But the problem is he himself is living a reality show. He's playing a part. He's playing the part of a secure...
physically fit.
Well, healthy, I don't even care about that part. Yeah. Of course, that's ludicrous. I mean, yes. But he's playing a part, and he's so lost himself in the part. That's what makes him dangerous. Because it doesn't have the executive function, literally. Not that executive function, but, you know, the frontal function anymore, to really know when am I living in this reality I've created of myself, which isn't really who I am. And when you have that conflict, you are definitely more dangerous.
Well, we're going to shift gears here and talk about Ivanka Trump's island. A different Trump, a different part of the world. Crazy story, in my opinion, and in the opinion of a lot of Albanians. And we'll also talk about the effort to erase history at the Bunker Hill Monument. Charles Goldman with me, folks. Ed Fallon here. Back in a minute with more conversation on the Fallon Forum. A reminder that underwriting for this program is provided by Dr. David Drake, a psychiatrist serving patients in Iowa and Colorado. More information at 515-229-5085.
Thanks to Central Iowa Realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon with you here, folks, broadcasting from Des Moines, Iowa. Charles Goldman is with me as well in the studio. And a reminder that underwriting for the Fallon Forum is provided by real estate agent Joe Henry. More information at 515-208-7312. All right, Charles, I don't believe you've ever climbed Bunker Hill Monument. I have. Kathy and I. It's nearly 300 steps.
Oh, yeah. No, I have been there. I went to school in Boston.
You climbed it?
Yeah.
When you were younger?
Yeah.
Oh, so I get more brownie points because I climbed it when I was older. Anyway, but apparently, this is kind of incredible, but one guy complained about slogans or quotes that were included on panels at the monument, complained and said they were woke, and so they're being removed. The Park Service, I just responded to this one guy.
Well, what... The story, as I understand it, was that a visitor took issue with a quote related to women's suffrage.
Right.
Yeah. Now, it doesn't say if it's a man or a woman, but let's face it. I'm sure it was a man. Right. It led to a review of other material that was at the site because, Bunker Hill is not just about the Battle of Bunker Hill, which occurred...
Which the colonists lost.
Yes, but it was also the first sort of stand-up battle with the British regulars. And they use it as an opportunity to talk about people's view of freedom and the history of the United States. And so there was this complaint about women's suffrage being too woke.
Incredible ideology.
To be presented there. And, President Trump signed an executive order to scrub corrosive ideology from federal institutions and the parks and everything else, they went through and reviewed some other of the quotes or, panels that they'd put up.
And the stuff they got rid of, it's incredible. Stuff regarding slavery.
Well, they always get stuff.
Yeah,
regarding slavery, rid of, because it's kind of like what they did with the Department of Justice website. They're getting rid of all of the pictures, video, anything related to J6.
Right.
The attack of the Patriots.
I believe there was also some panel at the Bunker Hill Monument that referenced the wrongs that were committed against Native Americans.
No, that's also another one that's corrosive, right? Because we have to stop thinking of people. We have to stop thinking of people by their race or their ethnicity. But we also have to talk about the fact that Christians and white people are persecuted in the United States, and that the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice is now much more concerned about the way the civil rights of white people are being interfered with.
And a couple of these quotes go back to 1846. That was a letter to the Liberator, which was an abolitionist newspaper. That was the quote about slavery. And one goes back to a Boston newspaper in 1875. I mean, this stuff has been there for a long time.
Yeah, well, it's never
been controversial before.
There was another one about being in favor of immigration. Now that a public orator has declared that foreign-born men have no association with the men of the revolution, it is our duty to show that in love and freedom, in love of freedom and loyalty to the republic, the citizens of foreign birth took no second place. That one was one that they haven't actually removed these panels yet, but they are the ones that have been labeled for removal. I'm not sure what they're going to put up instead.
probably just
well, I assume for this
praising Trump's manhood.
I assume no. For this one, where they're talking about actually that immigrants have, you know, been a boon to the United States, I'm sure it's going to be a picture of Stephen Miller and talking about his days at Santa Monica High School. But that this is considered corrosive, you know, and we see some of that going on here in Iowa, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what's going on in Iowa? The session here just ended, and one of the laws that was, you know, signed by our outgoing governor was that the University of Iowa, I guess Iowa State and Northern U and I must have the same thing going on.
Sure.
Put together a what's the Institute of Democracy or whatever.
I can't remember the name, but it's a total gloss over.
Basically, it's you know a deracinated form of the history of the United States that doesn't involve anything we did bad, you know, and initially they put it there hoping you know the students would voluntarily take a course on civics, essentially, of I should say you know sort of washed civics. And I think there was like 40 students out of how many thousands at the University of Iowa that signed up. So now they're making it mandatory that you have to take the courses at this institute before you can graduate with a degree from the University of Iowa.
Crazy stuff is happening, folks.
Yeah.
And crazy stuff is happening overseas as well because of a different Trump. Ivanka Trump and her husband came upon a magical...
Special envoy.
Came upon
that
a magical
envoy.
Island in the Mediterranean.
No,
that's
special envoy Jared Trump.
Okay, yeah.
Not Jared Trump. Yeah, Jared Kushner.
Yeah. And they discovered an island they just had to have. And here's Ivanka talking about that that purchase.
You know, it's not even a business for me, despite the scale of it. We not only the island, but we have 5 miles of beachfront directly across from the island, this beautiful peninsula with a lagoon on one side, the ocean on the other, beautiful white sand beaches. For me, this is, it feels more like a challenge than anything else. The culmination of all of my experience in real estate, all of my travel, a lot of reflection on how I want to live, how I think people increasingly are wanting to live and trying to really build something that's a tangible manifestation of that.
Yeah, a tangible manifestation of being able to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on a vacation.
Well, yeah, and I hear that and I think, you know, Marie Antoinette. Is this not a version of Let Them Eat Cake? I mean, and meanwhile, the protests, the Albanians protesting this, it's huge. I mean, this is a special place to them. It's not just an abandoned island that Ivanka and her husband just happened to stumble upon. It's just,
well, the whole origin story is a lie, because the origin story is they just happened upon it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And
the fact is
they swam out to it. Yeah, and they climbed up to the top.
Well, the fact was that they were clearly negotiations already going on with the Albanian government about reclassifying what's essentially a nature preserve and can't be developed,
right?
So that you would be able to do the development. And that happened at least a year ago, if not more. So this is it wasn't like they just happened upon it, right?
Right.
You know,
it wasn't quite as magical as she makes it.
No. Yeah. I mean, it's fairly similar to, you know, the origin story of the United States, where the slaves down south love their masters, you know, and they learned a lot of great skills by having worked as a slave down south.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you're right. The absolute cluelessness of the feudal lords that we now have. I mean, and it's not just Ivanka, right? I mean, you know, they have all this time on their hands, right? And all this money. And what do they do with it? They just go out and say, well, we're going to spoil another place, you know? And
I mean, and the goal is to build a resort there.
Right.
And what got me was not only do they now own this island, but apparently they own 5 miles of beach across from it. Five miles.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, they showed like what it's going to look like, and it looked amazingly similar to the ballroom he wants to build.
Really?
No, it didn't. But yeah, how about using your time for something valuable?
Yeah.
You know, wouldn't you like to leave a legacy that doesn't involve, you know, monuments to yourself? You know,
apparently not.
Yeah, I mean, she's got all this time on her hands, and she, you know, I just have this passion for real estate development.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like.
So, you know, it's interesting. It's not. There are people in Albania that want this, and they are primarily in positions of government. The Prime Minister, Edi Rama, I'm not quite sure how to say his name, he says he welcomes the investment and the creation of jobs. Isn't that what politicians always say when they buy into something stupid?
Well, once you build something, the kind of jobs you have at hotels are not usually the high-end jobs. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of service jobs, yeah. You know, and it's just what you're saying. We live in a culture here now where it's people who think they're entitled to everything, right? And that they're the smartest people around, you know, and therefore they're entitled to everything, and the world would stop if they weren't here. And everybody else. And the people in Albania, who obviously this is one of the poorest countries in the world, and to some degree, you would think, yeah, that sounds like good. This is something that, you know, we'll get some jobs, at least for some period of time out of it. And people, thousands of people are in the streets. You know, I saw this morning they had a picture of Ivanka and Jared, you know, with the prime minister or the president on a leash.
Oh, the prime minister was the one on the leash.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so
some of these protests get pretty creative. Yeah, yeah. You have to wonder how far these people are going to go. You know, I mean, there's no shame. And by the way, also, she has the most prominent vocal fry I've ever heard of anybody ever.
Vocal what?
Vocal fry. I can't do it.
Yeah,
Kathy does a great vocal fry. It's weird. Your voice is kind of drops, and it sounds like you've been smoking a pack of cigarettes a day for your entire life.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I'm right there. Yeah.
So like a certain raspiness.
Yeah. There's a great little video about the vocal fry. I can't remember who it's by, but there's a clip from some show where a guy walks into a coffee shop, and the barista has this very pronounced vocal fry, and he just slams her about it. You know, that's not your real voice. And it's really funny, actually. Although I would say that I think Ivanka Trump's vocal fry is more pronounced than the one they caricature in that clip. Anyway, so that's entirely secondary. You know, I wonder if the Albanian government is going to have the guts to stand up and say no. And you know, and
well, I doubt it because they've already said yes.
Yeah. Well, they could unsay.
Well,
yes.
They're already doing the development. They're already ripping up the beach.
They've already started.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I didn't get that impression.
Yeah.
But. They could stop. I mean, it looks like. I wonder how big of a deal this is in terms of its potential impact on whatever Albania's next election is. But you know, it's kind of the equivalent of our data centers here, which we'll talk about next week, Charles.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, yeah.
I think the part of it again is to ask the question. I mean, this is an administration that supposedly was populist, right? That their concerns were your concerns.
The Albanian,
not the Albanians, yeah. Ours. I have no idea what the Albanian administration concerns are. But,
sure.
You know, and again, you meet people who, and I know you have a lot more to do with talking to people who you know to be Trump supporters. I try to avoid that as much as I possibly can. because, you know, and what about the behavior of any of these people suggests to you that they care about your... And now the president is basically, multiple times, says, I really don't care.
Yeah, he actually said he doesn't care.
You know, I just don't care.
He said the truth.
Right.
Yeah. Have you ever heard a president or any politician say, I don't care, when it comes to the impact of a war or the impact of gas prices or anything like that, and not be ousted from office pretty darn quickly?
Because you're right. Many of the things that have happened would clearly have had your party come to you and say, you know, you got to go.
Yeah.
But the amount of fear that he instills in the Republican caucus and the fact that the only thing that seems important to them is to continue to enjoy the perks of being in office, you know, because... I mean, especially if you're in the House, what's the point of being there? They tell you how to vote. You know, I mean, it's not like you really get a lot of freedom to you know, work on behalf of your constituents. It's frightening how, again, as you say, it is kind of a Marie Antoinette, you know, kind of attitude, which, and again, I wonder, you know, if you drive people far enough, even if you have the, you know, tools of persuasion, you know, and to deliver violence in, you know, in your hands, people, enough people can override that, you know, and I don't know that you can continue to make people suffer.
Right. It did not end well for Marie Antoinette.
No. And she actually mean it. She might not have ever said that.
I was there, Charles. And actually, the cake was pretty good. Hey, I got to run to a break here. Ed Fallon with you, folks. Charles Goldman in the studio with me. Back in a minute, and a reminder that underwriting for this program provided by Western Optometry. Information at 515-789-3055. Thanks to our nonprofit partners, including Circle of Peacemakers. Formerly the Catholic Peace Ministry, Circle of Peacemakers works with people of all faiths toward a world without war. CPM opposes runaway military spending while domestic needs go unmet. Instead of endless wars, CPM supports diplomacy. Visit CircleOfPeacemakers.com. At Westrum Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrum and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrum's primary concern. Dr. Westrum and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrum Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village. Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon and Charles Goldman here, folks. Hey, underwriting provided by Architecture by Synthesis. More at architecturebysynthesis.com. All right, we're going to talk about Elon Musk. But first, Charles has a news short that is just, it's gnawing at his cranium.
yeah, so to speak.
Is it kind of a Florida man story?
No, I don't think it necessarily is. It just happened to occur in Florida, but
it could be a man.
Yeah. So basically, this story, and this is our early warning, you know, for be careful when you do your Halloween shopping this year. Evidently, a thrift store in near Tampa reported that as they were going through the things that were dropped off to be, you know, sorted out and then maybe placed on the shelves, that they came across what they initially thought was like a novelty skull for Halloween.
Made of plastic.
And they kind of looked at it real carefully and said, this looks a lot like a real skull. So
it's amazing what you can do with plastic these days.
That's right. They thought maybe it was 3D printed. But anyway, so they ended up calling the police. And at this point, they're not sure who dropped the skull off. But they did confirm that it is an actual human skull.
How old is it?
They don't know yet.
They don't know?
No, they just picked it up yesterday. It happened yesterday.
Oh. Okay.
The reason that this article, I think, was put on the internet was because something similar happened in Florida, in Fort Myers this time, about several years ago when, of all people, an anthropologist was at the thrift store shopping for Halloween items, came across a skull and looked at it and said, "That's a real skull." It's a good thing it was an anthropologist time.
I don't think it would take an anthropologist to determine whether something's a real skull or not.
Well, you know.
I mean, I think even a neophyte like me, I think I would know.
You'd think I would know. You think you would. But like I said, the 3D printing's getting pretty good these days. So, I looked at the story and said, that's just crazy stuff. Not once, but twice in Florida finding.
On the Gulf Coast.
Yeah, exactly.
Huh.
So yeah, they are trying to investigate the nature.
How do they figure out if it belongs to somebody? I mean, who? Obviously, it belongs to somebody, but how do they figure out who?
Well, you know, there may be some usable DNA that they could extract from the skull and use that to try to identify them if they're in the registry.
Here's another question. Do they have to buy it from the shop? The shop going to make any money on this at all?
I don't think so.
Or do they just take it?
They're going to write it off.
That's not stealing?
No, they're writing it off.
Okay. Seems like they could sell it for several hundred bucks. All right, speaking of skulls, Elon Musk, he has one, and he's filling it with money, and we're helping him out. Apparently, this SpaceX IPO offering is coming up. You know, that there's a chance that might actually affect your 401k.
Well,
which is incredible to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think just, you know, for background. So, you know, SpaceX actually has been around for 20 years, and
they haven't accomplished much.
Well, interestingly, they certainly haven't made money in that time.
Yeah. Or accomplished money.
And, you know, of course, because of SpaceX increasing visibility, because of putting up, you know, this system of low orbit satellite for the satellite internet, you know, for what's his business called that does that?
Starlink,
right. Yeah. You know, and obviously because increasingly, we're using rockets from companies that are private to go to the space station, go to the moon. You know, and of course, Musk has been out there forever talking about he wants to move a human civilization to Mars.
I want to move him to Mars.
But... Well, I think there are a lot of people who feel that way.
Yeah.
But so they brought out initial public offering of stock in SpaceX, which at this point is valued at $1.7 trillion. And it again shows that if you're a member of a certain class of people in the United States, you have advantages that nobody else has.
Yeah.
First of all, they're offering a stock at 100 times, at the IPO price, is 100 times revenue, not earnings. 100. So you're buying a stock that says you're going to pay $1. You're going to pay $100 for $1 of revenue. You know, the norm on what's already a highly overvalued market is usually less than 10. You know, like Google, like for a tech stock. Nvidia, you know, which is like the biggest, at least for the moment, tech stock, is like 25 times revenues. This is going to be 100 times revenues.
How does something that's not profitable do so well?
Well, why does the market keep going up as the fundamentals of the economy worsen? Things are worse for consumers. We're a consumer buying driven economy, right? Mm. And what are these executives particularly good at? I mean, yeah, Musk is a smart guy. He's a strange guy.
He's got a big skull.
Yeah, he's a strange guy, you know, and certainly he's accomplished things, but he's lost money on a lot of his endeavors. I mean, and what he does with those endeavors that lose money is he rolls them into something that's making money and hides the fact that they're losing money, right? So for instance, you know, SpaceX is losing money and he rolled his AI company, you know, that makes that great AI Grok, which was making money, and it made SpaceX look like it's making money. But the business, as this prospectus shows, is not making money.
They lost $5 billion last year. Shell game with lots of
shells.
Well,
that's part of it. It's a shell game. Second of all, the company has to do perfectly to be able to justify that valuation. But the way the game is played here, and that's the thing that people are really kind of. And this has been on multiple outlets. This is not just, you know, the left-wing liberal, the radical left media, you know, is that, first of all, in spite of this offering, 80% of the stock is still going to be owned by Musk. So he retains control of a public company. And in fact, there are stipulations in the way the prospectus was written that not just because he owns the majority of the stock, but just the way the governance of the company is structured, the shareholders are going to have almost no control.
So why 80% and not 51%?
Well, because with 80%, first of all, he's going to make a ton of money.
Okay.
Right? Because he's going to make a ton of money because he's going to have this stock to ultimately share.
So who's going to sell? I mean, so I don't own stock. I never have. I probably never will. I'm pretty sure I never will. How is it that our money can get caught up in this?
Well, it's because of how the market has become increasingly structured. People have moved, for the most part, the retail investor, the non-insiders, you know, mom and pop, Main Street, whatever you want to call it, you know, the retail investors have moved increasingly into index funds. So essentially, there are various conglomerations of stocks that are put into these indices, like the, you know, the one you hear about all the time is like Dow Jones is one index, and you've got S&P 500, and you've got the, you know, the NASDAQ 1000. You've got all these indexes.
And do individuals get to approve that's how their money's going to work that way?
No. Well, by buying those ETFs, they're mostly exchange-traded funds now. It used to be that they used to be mutual funds like that. There are still mutual funds like that, but people have moved into these exchange-traded funds, which trade like stocks. And so the ones that are bound to indices have to duplicate the holdings of that index. And one of the things about this IPO is that normally there's a time period before a new stock can be put in one of these indices. And they're only going to have 14 trading days of SpaceX, and it's going to go into some of the biggest indices, which means that the day it goes in, all these index funds are going to have to buy that stock. And it's not like an actively traded mutual fund, or there are some actively traded ETFs where there's a management team that makes decisions. If you're locked into an index, you got to buy the stock and you have to duplicate it. You know, and so the day that happens, they're going to have to buy SpaceX, no matter how ridiculous the price is.
And no matter how much of it is controlled by the guy.
Correct.
Is he already a trillionaire, or is he just
He will be a trillionaire by the time he's done with this.
Yeah.
Right. And it, you know, obviously, and this is the first of probably a couple. Anthropic's going to come out, you know, AI company. OpenAI now is going to go public. It's all going to be the same. Everyone's going to get the same deal. Maybe they won't get as good a deal as Musk, you know. But yeah, this is the way the world works. And so for all the people who are out there, you know, you run into them, right? You ask them, well, why do you support Trump? You know, and they'll say, well, he's good for my 401k.
I've never heard anybody say that.
Really?
Nope,
you should listen to...
I've never heard that said.
Yeah, listen to some of the, you know, groups they get together to see where people are at, you know.
I've heard people say he supports small businesses, which he doesn't, but, you know, that's how they feel. But I never heard anybody specifically say
you
that.
Look at blogs and focus groups, and you'll hear people telling you, well, you know, my 401k is doing great, you know. Anyway. And he's kind of gotten people, because he talks incessantly about the stock market. And he's gotten people to somehow believe that is actually the economy. It doesn't matter if you go to the grocery store and you can see for yourself the prices are up, right? But, you know, my 401k is doing great, so that must be a good reason to continue to support this administration.
Well, good luck with the stock market, folks. For those of you who are involved with it, it's
so much. It's just like any other Ponzi scheme, which is you want to be the last one out while the going's good, right? And then who's ever holding the bag, it's their problem.
That's where insider trading really comes in.
Well, yes, that's absolutely true.
Hey, so Ed Fallon with you here, folks. Charles Goldman, we're going to be back in a minute. Underwriting provided by Dr. Kim Holding with Story County Veterinary Clinic, serving Story County pets for over 30 years. More information at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. And so, Charles, since we talked about, I'm sure one thing Elon Musk is going to do when he's a trillionaire is try to get to Mars as quickly as possible, and more power to him. But, you know, he could live in South Dakota.
Mars. The air, not breathable. The surface, cold and barren. But thousands are lining up for a chance to go and never come back. South Dakota, progressive, productive, and abundant in oxygen. Why die on Mars when you can live in South Dakota? South Dakota, you can live here.
Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design-build services for high-performance, low-maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Underwriting for this program provided by Gateway Market, a Des Moines grocery and cafe offering artisan local and global foods, and catering for business and social events. More information at gatewaymarket.com. Hey, Kathy Burns, welcome to the program. Good to have you here.
Hi.
And we're going to pick up on the conversation we had last week about the International Year of the Woman Farmer.
That's right.
Big deal.
Well,
even though our president has not recognized it.
No. Most other world leaders have. Last week we talked about our own recollections of women
right.
in our lives who
yeah.
did farm work but were not called farmers in particular. We're going to expand on that a little bit this week and talk about what the UN said when they made this declaration about why it's important to bring forth and let people learn more about women who produce food. One of the most compelling ones that we shared last week, I do want to repeat. Women, this is a quote from the UN, women are responsible for roughly half of the world's food production, yet in many countries they produce between 60, I'm sorry, and in many countries they produce between 60 and 80% of the food. Yet, globally, the prevalence of food insecurity is higher among women than men.
Yeah, that's sad and needs to change.
We have some evening out to do.
Yeah. And so there were other rationales offered by the UN as well about the diversity there's not just one profile that fits a woman farmer, even in one country.
Right.
It's
right.
diverse. I mean, even in our country, even in our state.
Well, in the U.S., when people say the word farmer, they almost always see a man in overalls with a tractor and a big hay bale.
Hmm.
And worldwide, according to the U.N., women's diversity includes young and older women, indigenous women, women in local communities, women with disabilities, refugee and displaced women, and many more. And I think we're seeing more of the women in agriculture that we know, you know, representing more different kinds of ethnicities and foods that they produce. And worldwide, it's got to be huge. Also, women farmers include producers, peasants, family, and smallholder farmers, seasonal laborers, fishers, fish workers, beekeepers, pastoralists, foresters, processors, traders, traditional knowledge holders, etc. So if you think about what it means to be someone who produces food, there are lots of ways to contribute and lots of ways that women contribute to that.
You know, I don't like to spend a lot of time online, but I got to say the online resources for growing food are pretty good. And most mm-hmm. of the videos I watch, most of the videos that I come upon, whether it's processing chickens, mm-hmm. caring for rabbits,
splitting a beehive,
or even just crop questions. I mean, yeah, there are men and women who are all both doing good work, but mm-hmm. I'd say 70% of the best videos I find are offered by women farmers.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, my favorite one is a beekeeper from Hawaii.
She does very
a great
good job. And she takes it slow and makes sure you can understand and doesn't rush through it.
Yeah, and she's funny.
Yeah.
Not even intentionally, I think. Just accidentally. But,
well, another rationale offered by the UN is that the agri-food systems employ a lot of women globally. In many countries, it says systems are a more important source of livelihood for women than for men.
Egg money.
Egg
money. The historic egg money.
Yes, you think about egg money. And the UN goes on to say, despite their essential role in agri-food systems, women farmers face more precarious working conditions, heavier workloads, and unequal access to resources. They add that their roles are often marginalized, their working conditions usually worse than men's, irregular, informal, part-time, even a little bit dangerous as far as a woman being vulnerable in the work situation.
Yeah, and I mean, some types of farming aren't that dangerous. What we do, I mean, our biggest danger, I think, is overdoing it and pulling a muscle, hurting it back, or in my case, being stung by bees because I'm allergic.
Or the time I tore my hamstring and meniscus or something, stepping in a rabbit hole.
But you know, some of the most dangerous work in farming, at least in our experience, is around heavy machinery, and we don't do that.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And we don't have big livestock. We might get pecked by a chicken or even scratched by a rabbit.
I have been nipped by a rabbit, yes.
Yes, yeah.
But what's the answer to beginning to... already, again, as you noted, women are more prominent in food production than men globally. Mm-hmm. And what is the UN doing? I guess having the International Year recognizing their contributions is important, but is there anything else happening beyond that that might... It might encourage us that we're going to see a more equal recognition.
Well, whatever area you live in, see if there's a forum or an educational opportunity relating to International Year of the Woman Farmer. Look up women farmers in your area. Mm. Find out what they do, and if they're selling products, find
support
out
them,
where you can support them. It's not always a woman just solely on her own. She may be part of a larger system, but...
You know, what you said earlier about stereotypes, about the stereotype of a farmer, a guy with a seed corn hat and overalls. I got a friend, he's a dairy farmer from Maine, and he he goes out to milk his cows in shorts and a Hawaiian shirt. And so when a kid who knows him was asked to draw a farmer, drew that, shorts and Hawaiian shirt, and then was told by the teacher, no, that's not a farmer. Oh, yeah, it is. No, that's not a farmer.
So we know this guy.
We all need to have our stereotypes shattered from time to time.
Yeah.
Kathy, thanks for the conversation. Folks, thanks to our production team of Sherry Herdina, Forrest Dedeman, Charles Goldman, Kathy Burns, and myself, Ed Fallon. Thanks also to the Des Moines Irish Session for our bumper music, underwriting provided by Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Western Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, Architecture by Synthesis, and real estate agent Joe Henry. Also, Circle of Peacemakers, Iowa Physicians for Social Responsibility, Bold Iowa, Birds and Bees Urban Farm, and Climate March. Thanks, folks. This is Ed Fallon. We'll be back next week with another hour of Cutting Edge Talk Radio.